Welcome to Careertools. This week, identifying power dynamics, part two. The questions this cast answers are, what are power dynamics? Why are power dynamics important to observe and understand? And what can you do once you do understand power dynamics?
We're excited to bring you our Virtual Effective Manager and Virtual Effective Hiring Manager training in other languages. We've partnered with experts who provide on-the-spot interpretation services in the language of your preference during our virtual training events. And while there's a small upfront cost for the service, it's well worth it to ensure the individuals in your organization understand the content and can ask live in real time their questions and receive in real time the responses to their questions in their language of preference during the training. If you're interested in understanding more, email us at maggie@manager-tools.com.
So Amanda, last week we were talking about some of the cues that we can look for who is the most powerful in the room. And as a reminder, we said that the most powerful doesn't mean better or superior. It just relates to how much role power, relationship power, or expertise power someone has relative to the other people in the room. It's just an acknowledgement of the math of people's relative power.
It's a neutral term.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you.
It's not good or bad. There's not
it just is.
Superiority. It just is.
It's like
and
gravity.
Depending on what you do with it. Right. But there's a lot of those words out there that people have that innate sense of like, oh, that's good or bad. And when we're talking about power dynamics, you might have that feeling, but that's not what it is. It is a neutral word. And it depends on how you interact with it that can make it good or bad.
Yes. So we're going to continue with some clues that as to who is the most powerful person in the room. And the next one is more powerful people's ideas and recommendations are accepted more often. And nobody gets their own way 100% of the time. Nobody's ideas are accepted 100% of the time. And if a manager is smart, they don't force their ideas to be accepted 100% of the time. They could, but then smart people don't. But the people with more power have their ideas and recommendations listened to more fully, accepted, and implemented more often. And so that, again, is not just role power. So someone with a lot of expertise power, someone who is smart about a specific subject, their ideas and recommendations as to that subject will clearly be accepted more often because they're the right ideas. But also someone with the right relationships, someone who can get backing for their ideas and recommendations, theirs will be accepted more often. So you don't have to have role power to get your ideas accepted. You can develop expertise and get them accepted that way, or you can develop relationships. And relationships is the easiest because you can start that one today. You don't have to go get a degree.
Yeah, and it's based on trust. If you trust the person with the idea, you're more likely to have someone go along with it.
And that's a good reminder that power can be lost as well as won. Because if the ideas and recommendations fail, expertise power starts to disappear. Because if people think you're an expert and then your ideas fail, clearly you're not the expert they thought you were. If your ideas fail and people backed you because of your relationship, they'll back off because being associated with your bad ideas is not helping them. So that your power shifts and it increases and decreases all of the time. It's moving. It's not static. So you need to be aware of that and be aware of how it's changing so that you can take advantage of knowing the subtleties of the power dynamic and the relative amounts that everybody has.
Yeah, and when to kind of stop yourself because you can degrade any of those role power, power of expertise, or relationship power. So by constantly throwing out ideas that you might not know really work, but just so you sound smart, is not the best way to go about it because it can backfire.
Absolutely.
Right? After so long, someone's going to stop listening, and you don't want to do that either. So now let's talk about more powerful people start conflict. Ooh, I like this. More powerful people start conflict and less powerful people end it. The willingness to have a contradictory view, challenge assumptions, or oppose instructions takes confidence that you have to have some kind of authority to do so. So when we say conflict, again, it's more of that neutral word. It's just having a differing opinion, mm-hmm. right? It's not a bad conflict, but it's, right? It's just throwing different ideas out there or not going with the group, right? So that authority stems from power. The confidence you have in to do that comes from some sort of power. Whoever is starting the conflict believes that they have the upper hand in at least one of the forms of the power. The person with the less power will demur in order to end the conflict because they don't believe they have the authority to challenge it.
One of the places you see that, Amanda, you see it every week because you present every week at an effective manager, effective communicator, and effective hiring manager conferences. And you're standing at the front and giving the presentation. And there's some people in the room who will ask questions because they want to know the answers. And there's some people who ask questions in a way that's challenging to you because they
yes.
feel that they have enough power, either expertise power or role power, not to contradict, but to ask questions in a challenging way.
Yeah. To make sure I know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Yeah. And other people don't. They assume that because you're standing at the front of the room, you must have the expertise and they allow you to give your presentation. And
I like both. I enjoy both types of attendees.
So some of the power is about perception and how you perceive other people because you don't have a differing amount of expertise for one side of the room versus the other. Your expertise is the same. It's about their perception of your expertise and their perception of their role and their expertise against yours and their relationship, I guess, against yours. The amount of power that anybody has in any of the types isn't all about something tangible. Some of it is about their own perception as well.
Yeah. And kind of to your point, you sometimes cannot tell who the expert is, who has that expertise power, because they might not be outright forthcoming with that giant sign saying, I know everything about this. So they kind of throw it out there to see, well, do you know more than me or do I know more? And so sometimes it can be hard. So you really have to look at those subtleties, the questions that they ask or how they ask them to help you out with that, because it's not always blaringly obvious who the expert in the room could be in those cases.
More powerful people make decisions. So the person with the most power in the situation will make the decision. And that doesn't necessarily mean they'll also make the plan or the recommendation. They may just be confirming or rubber stamping someone else's recommendation. However, less powerful people will not take action unless they believe that the most powerful person has sanctioned that action by making a decision. You see this sometimes in email chains where somebody has made a recommendation or asked, can I do this? And then a week goes past and nobody has done it because the powerful person in the chain hasn't said, yes, go ahead. Mm-hmm. And they might have said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But because they didn't say, yes, go ahead, there wasn't a definite decision made. The person underneath them, or the person who feels less powerful doesn't feel like I got a definite yes, and I don't feel confident in going ahead. I feel like this might come back to bite me because yeah. I want an absolutely certain yes. So you can tell in an email thread who the most powerful person is if a decision is asked. If someone asks for a decision to be made, who is the person that everyone is asking or looking to for that decision to be made? The same in, you know, a Slack message or in a meeting, but it's interesting that you can see it in email. Now, here's the important caveat when it comes to powerful people making decisions or anything where we're looking at a CEO or someone with a lot of power in a situation especially when there's a really big imbalance of power, because sometimes those people will deliberately act as if they are less powerful. So, for example, if a CEO has a meeting with shop floor workers on a listening tour, you know, when there's a new CEO and they go around all of the factories and they're just supposed to be listening to everybody and gathering information because they're new and they don't know how the company works, the CEO may allow others to go into a space first and choose seats and speak first, or interrupt her and not interrupt herself, or allow them to speak first because they're sending the message, I'm here to listen to you. So the CEO is putting herself in the role of less powerful because she has a specific message she wants to send, which is, I'm listening to you. You also see this sometimes when a manager or someone, a boss's boss, or, you know, someone very high up or several levels up, is in a junior's meeting and that person is just there to, it will say, I'm just here to observe, or I'm just sitting in, and they'll sit back from the table and make themselves small, whereas normally the most powerful person sits up to the table and sort of takes up space. And that person is deliberately kind of making themselves less powerful to allow the junior person to come forward in the meeting. They'll also sometimes not ask challenging questions in presentations. They'll ask supporting questions if they're trying to help a junior person or help whoever's presenting through a presentation.
Yeah. And even with questions, sometimes when those questions pop up, everyone looks to the person that they know is more powerful and they just stay quiet or defer to the person giving the presentation to help, you know, kind of lend that power to them in that meeting.
Seattle, we're headed your way January 16th and 17th of 2024. We're coming to town for an EMC and ECC, Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. Y'all, the new year is upon us. If you're looking for a promotion in 2024, we can help you get ready for the next role at our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. Come to Seattle, see us, and learn how to get there. Sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
Now let's talk about how do you use the power cues. Sociologically, the relative balance of power in a group of people gives people in that group cues on how to behave in order to remain in the group. And we talked about this earlier, that there are the norms, the social norms that you have to follow in order to stay in that group or almost be accepted in the group. And we know this. And sometimes they come more natural than other times. But power dynamics are often used as shorthand in the kind of workplace advice that compares, when it compares the workplace to high school, right? You have your different groups. And for some reason, when I think of this, I think of the movie Mean Girls.
Mm-hmm.
There's that really big, it's a Hollywood power dynamic and it's completely false, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you think of like Hollywood and high school power dynamics, I always think of Mean Girls. So the people who believe that the power at work is a bad thing and that it will only be misused or abused or used to control, or use this term as if power can only be negative, as if they're saying power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, is factually always true. Kind of going back to if you're going to use this for bad or if you're going to misuse your power cues, that's more on you. And it's absolutely not true because power dynamic is neutral.
Yes.
It's not all the mean girls in high school with all the power to make people move from their lunch tables. I think the best example,
yes.
Right? And then the person trying to be in that group, it becomes corrupt. That's not how power dynamics are because it's neutral. So it's all depending on how you use it.
It's like money, or it's like the water flowing in a river. And there's rocks and it flows around the rocks, or the pinball that we talked about. And it's how it's used that gives the positive or negative impact. And groupthink, which is the opposite, where a team all think exactly the same way is as dangerous to the health of a team as the constant conflict of a team with only differing opinions. Either way, either extreme is bad. So in order to work together successfully, and in order to be successful in an organization, we have to have some understanding of the rules of behavior in the group. And as people say, you have to know the rules before you can break them. And that means we have to be able to watch the power dynamics, take the cues, and act accordingly when it's appropriate to do so, if we don't want to be one of the professionals whose career suffers when they don't see the subtleties of the power dynamics around them.
All right. So follow the power dynamic in public. In a meeting, don't contradict the most powerful person. When that person has made a decision, don't continue to argue your point. Don't question their logic. If you remember earlier, Wendy had a big fail with this early on because she argued everything. She always thought she was right. That was her example. So we're saying don't do that. No, take those cues and don't contradict the most powerful person in the room.
And this is the kind of cue that people early in their career miss. I'm not the only one, thank goodness, because otherwise that would be embarrassing. But people miss it and then they wonder why they're getting negative feedback. But if you think back when we talked about being a player in a computer game, you just picked a fight with someone with a lot more power than you and you lost. That's how simple it is. If you think of those little graphs above people's heads with the relative amounts of power, they had nice strong green bars and you had reds and oranges and you lost. Taking on someone with a lot more power than you requires that first you rally a crew. You create relationships with other people that will support you. And also that you fight some lesser battles first. Like talk to your boss in private first, maybe. Yeah. Like gather some strength from some smaller battles, maybe.
Yeah.
In public is the worst place to fight with anyone, whether they have more power with you or not. And when I say fight, I mean argue that you're right. Even if you're right, a lot of us who believe that we're right, like me, like to make sure that everybody knows we're right. And correcting someone in public embarrasses them. And that is not good for your relationship. So if you find yourself contradicting someone and correcting them in public, just stop and wait for a private moment to continue the conversation. That's off topic. But that's my hint.
Yeah. And even if you think that's going to help your expertise power because you were right and you decided that this was the hill that you were going to stand on, it really does impact that relationship power. And we know that relationship power is the one that you really want to have.
And if you're right, everybody will find out that you were right because whatever decision was being made that was wrong will have to be undone and it will be done the right way, the way you suggested. So everybody will know. You don't have to prove that you were right.
And on the topic of battles, we're going to say, choose your battles. Choose your battles wisely, right? Consider the relative amounts of power between you and anyone you want to disagree with, contradict, correct, oppose, or debate with. Do you need to build your case or support first? Do you really need to get that rallying those smaller battles that we were talking about first? And the battle that you're currently picking, is it really worth the fight? You have to know that ahead of time. Like, is this really worth possibly hurting your expertise power or your relationship power? Is it worth that fight? This can even apply to the way you word an email. Again, is it worth pointing out that small mistake that could potentially embarrass someone? Doing it publicly, right? Is it really worth doing? So you need to consider that.
I wish there was a term for the opposite of choose your battles, because I was just thinking the opposite is true too. Choose when you're going to support someone in public. If you're going to choose when to disagree, contradict, correct, or oppose, then you should choose when to do the opposite, the positive things of all of those, so that you build relationship and expertise power, right?
Yeah, I think that's choosing your battle.
Yeah.
You don't always have to contradict, but you can choose to support and be that rallying cry of someone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be that. It, again, I think choosing your battle is, again, pretty neutral. Like,
yes,
we say it's more negative, but really it's what do you want to support, or either way.
Yeah, right? You're right. And the last of these points is always be increasing your relationship power, because relationship power is by far the strongest of the powers, and it requires the least amount of effort to gain. You can work on it every day in every interaction. So, for example, when there's a person with a lot of power of whichever type, and they're going to be in a meeting, give yourself a buffer either side so that you can arrive early and stay a few minutes after, so that you have some time to chat if it works out that way. And we're not talking about cozying up with someone with a lot of power, because most people in our experience are more afraid of getting a reputation for cozying up with people than actually do so. What more likely happens is a young professional, someone early in their career, thinks, I must be seen to be really busy. I must be seen to be focused on work. I must be seen to be at my desk. It's more important to be seen to be achieving things than to be chatting with people. So I'm going to work right up until the moment I have to leave for this meeting. I'm going to walk straight into the meeting. I'm going to be in the meeting and I'm going to leave right away. And they miss the chance to build a relationship with someone, or even to meet someone who could be a supporter down the road for them. So they never plan to spend a few minutes with the people in that meeting. And so they never have the chance to build those relationships. And later on, you discover that the more senior people, it's not that their calendars are more empty, it's that they don't schedule anything for 15 minutes before the meeting so that they have some time to chat before the meeting, because they know that that relationship time is valuable.
Yeah. You want everyone to be able to put a face to your name.
Mm-hmm.
Not, oh, that girl, she just runs in the meeting and runs out.
Yeah.
And because we see the emails, you see the Slacks, but until you actually know someone's face and have had a conversation to put it into your memory, you're just a name. That's not a good way to build a relationship. It has to have that meaningful conversation. And you have to be pretty consistent with it, because nobody wants a long distance relationship, right? That every couple months you're saying hi. You have to be pretty consistent when it comes to building relationships. And the saying that you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with is true of power too. The five people that you spend the most time with probably have the same amount of organizational power as you do. When there's opportunities to spend time with others in the organization, take them. When you have those opportunities, or you create those opportunities, right? That's really what this is about. Create those opportunities that you have to spend with the more powerful people, and eventually it'll all kind of average out, right? You'll gain more expertise power because you have conversations with them, or you gain that relationship power because they can now put a face to the name. But you really have to work on creating those opportunities, because they're not always going to fall into your lap, especially because we all have very busy calendars. So you have to be intentional with this one.
For sure.
Yeah.
So power dynamics exist in every organization. Recognizing and understanding them isn't about playing office politics. It's about effectively navigating complex organizational environments to achieve goals and promote positive change. So instead of thinking about it as politics, think about yourself as an ambassador. The ideal is that your relationships further the objectives of your team and the organization through communication and relationships, and not backdoor agreements. Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back with a new topic next week. Bye, everyone.